Hi everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of Page One Extra. I am flying solo today in terms of presenting, but that's more than made up for by the fact that we've got not one, but two brilliant guests today. Two top literary agents, Felicity Blunt from Curtis Brown Group and Gráinne Fox from the United Talent Agency. Thank you both so much for giving us the time today.
I just thought we could start maybe by having you introduce yourselves and just telling us a bit about your role as an agent. Felicity, if you want to go first.
Sure. Yeah, my name is Felicity Blunt. I've been an agent at Curtis Brown since, I think, 2008. I joined in 2005, so I'm officially a lifer. I think my list is made up of a whole kind of range. It goes from the very commercial, such as actually I've got her here, Jilly Cooper, all the way to the more literary novelist, Claire Keegan. I love unique storytelling and prose-led fiction. And I consider the role of a literary agent to be somewhat of a shape-shifting role, in that it really depends on what a client needs and sort of how much they need of one thing. But it can be editor, it can be accountant, it can be lawyer, it can be kind of shield arm, it can be sword arm, it can be all of those things. And that's, I think, why I love the job so much.
Great. And Gráinne?
My name is Gráinne Fox. I am working at UTA. I used to be an agent in London for about 9 years at an agency called Ed Victor Limited. And then I came to New York in about 2009 and started working at Fletcher & Company. And UTA recently acquired Fletcher & Company as part of a huge acquisition into the literary marketplace. And so we've been there now for just over a year. It's our one year anniversary. And I represent the gamut of very, very literary fiction to very, very commercial book group fiction is what they would call it over here too. And similarly, like Felicity, my old boss used to always say that a job of a literary agent is to promote, defend, and protect, and sort of very sort of fundamental. And also, you know, make sure the author gets paid on time. But it's also like a confidant and a psychologist in some way too, because as I've stayed in this business as long as you, Felicity, too, you realize that the dynamic between you and your authors is a very intimate, sort of delicate balance sometimes. And remembering their vulnerabilities is sometimes a lot of what we do, and navigating that when you're selling their book and editing their book and shepherding them through this Byzantine publishing process, which it can seem quite sometimes, but, you know, for debut authors especially.
Yeah, I think that's right. And yeah, it's such an important role because, you know, being an author, you're often there on your own, you're writing, you're questioning yourself all the time and stuff. So if you've got someone like a good agent that you can rely on and ask questions and that sort of thing, then it makes a huge difference, I think, to so many people. We are a week away, I think, or less than that, from the London Book Fair starting. And I want to ask you about that, because obviously that's a big calendar event in every agent's year. And I thought, to start with, could you maybe, one of you maybe explain what the book fair is and why these sorts of events are so important for agents? I don't know who wants to take that.
I don't mind. I mean, as a current Londoner, I'm happy to say that. I mean, the London Book Fair is something that happens every year. It seems to shift in the calendar, so we're never quite sure where it's going to land. It landed quite early this year. So it's been quite a frenetic preparation since January for the book fair. I mean, I think the role of all book fairs has evolved slightly as we've, you know, become more of an electronic driven industry, in that originally you would be pitching face to face. You know, it was hand selling books at the fair, at the tables, in the Wright Center, at the publisher's stands. Some of that, undoubtedly does still happen, and it's tremendously exciting when it does. And I suspect this fair, because it has come so early in the calendar, is actually set up to be a fair that feels a little bit more old school, because we haven't wrapped up all of our selling of some major books that we were sending out into the marketplace ahead of the fair. I think for me, the importance of the fair is really about the relationships that you can foster and continue to grow there, because our business is an international business. We obviously sell into our markets. Grania sells into North America. I sell into the UK and British Commonwealth. But there's this, I mean, if you have a book that is selling internationally, you can have 40+ territories, you can have 40+ editors working on your book. And for my rights team and for Grania's rights team, all of those people are coming together and collecting, they're sharing ideas about books, they're sharing things that they've read that they loved, how they're publishing, the different successes of books. And all of those things are really inspirational. And it becomes, for me, kind of a collective consciousness of people who love books, who are excited about books, who, you know, care about author care and sort of want to see books in the hands of readers. And that's like an amazing melting pot to be a part of for 4 days. It means there's like speed dating. I mean, Grania, I think, you know, we'll both have a meeting every 90 minutes for like 4 days. It is very intense. But you've seen those people over the last 10, 15 years, and then you know them and you have a shorthand, you know what it is that they're looking for and what you could be selling them. And it's genuinely really, really exciting. And when you have a book that you're selling at the fair, which Grania and I actually had, I've never had a book that I've sold at the actual fair until I met Grania. So she's like, she changed my life. It was very exciting.
Yeah, that was, and it's so true, what you say, because it's a very sort of, it's community, because publishing and agenting especially is a business of relationships. You're constantly checking in with the people that you've already sold books to or that you haven't yet but really want to. And I finally sold a book around about this time last year to an editor that Felicity and I both know really, really well at this point. But I had never sold her a book before. And I sold this huge novel to her. And I've known her for 20 years. And I've seen her at every book fair and every cocktail party. But so for me, coming from UTA in New York, it's really important for me because I lived in London. I love to go back to London and I love to see my friends in publishing because I've known them for such a long time. And I love to meet new people and sort of get excited by the next generation of editors and agents coming up. But it's also a really great moment for us to kind of connect with the Curtis Brown Group, because we've had this huge momentous change, you know, over a year ago. And so I think that's really exciting for us as well. We've been sort of able to connect the dots between us. Even when we, like Felicity and I sort of knew each other before the acquisition. So that was helpful. And we actually sold a book at, as she says, at the book fair last year. But for all of us coming over to really spend time with each other, it's a hyper social gathering and a sense of community in publishing that's really exciting and is working so well from
I think it just helps immeasurably in terms of how well I can caretake my authors, the deeper my relationships are with my UTA colleagues, like the more I know Grania and the more I know what her taste is, the more exciting it is to share books with. Like, we're all book geeks, right? We're all the people who like went to the library with a library card on the weekend and got like the maximum number of novels you could possibly like then fit in a suitcase, you know. And I love that about all of my colleagues, that we don't have exactly the same taste. There are so many different versions of what a book lover can be. Like, you can, for me, you can love Jilly Cooper and Marion Keyes and also love Barbara Kingsolver. For some people, they might like only one of those authors, but that's fine. It's just about finding common ground with other people that you work with, so that when you find an author that you're so excited by, you have, you know, any number of people that actually you could choose to work with, but you know exactly the right one to put this author in the hands of. And it is, it's so lovely to share those authors' careers and those books and to talk about edits and to bounce ideas. Like with Grania, like we have a book that we were working on, I'd worked on it and then, you know, had lost all objectivity. She read it, she gave me some notes, and that's how we then kind of evolve that work before we send it out to market, that we're continuing to try and interrogate it together and bring in fresh readers and make sure that we're pushing it to like the best point it can be before we send it out, so that author can get the best deals with the best houses, with the right editor. And it's such a collaborative process, and we're always drawing off each other for knowledge and indeed to like help and kind of provide insight when you might have got too close to a work and worked on it, you know, for like 12 months sometimes. And both Fletcher and Co., which now being part of UTA, and Curtis Brown, you know, we're 125 years old as a literary agency. I mean, you know, I don't know anybody who is actually 125 years old. We're old. And I think, you know, that's our legacy. That is the cornerstone of what both agencies, you know, we are author-led. We want to find those voices that are not only relevant today, but going to be read in 20, 30, 40 years. And that isn't every book. But how exciting when you end up like still working with, say, the estate of Daphne du Maurier, or, you know, again, even Jilly Cooper was publishing books in the 1980s, but they're still being read today. It's I think, like, you know, that's what gets somebody like Rania and I really, really excited. It's not everybody who get geeks out about it, but we definitely do.
Totally do. It's nice to kind of have that sort of two brains better than one sort of approach sometimes too, like you said, and just to get excited. And that's the book fair as well. It's to see old friends, meet new people, and get excited about the job you do and the books you're talking about.
Well, I was going to ask that because it sounds like it sort of, as you said, Felicity, it's kind of evolved from what it used to be, which is maybe where more actual sales were made on at the fair itself, into what sounds like a very important networking event almost. But even then, are you, I presume what you're doing there in the networking is that you're taking along catalogues, books that you know your authors are potentially working on that aren't ready yet. You're having discussions and things like that. Is that sort of thing that's going
exactly
on?
Exactly. So I mean, I don't know how long your pitch list is, Grania, but you know, you have your books, and you, depending on who you're meeting with, because they might, depending on what genre those books fall into, whether they're already sold in certain territories, you have half an hour to explain why you love these books and why they should buy them. And it's that's you pitch, and it's, you know, how you do that, it depends sometimes on the person you're meeting as well. That's why it's really important to know them.
Yeah. Or else, like, you see that person at a party and you're like, I have the book for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing. And it's, it's like bullseye. And that's the sort of opportunity that we're looking for, as well as having larger conversations with everyone. Yeah.
Is it almost like, because obviously you can have these, you can pitch the book during the year by email to people you know and stuff, but I imagine one of the great advantages is that you can actually catch someone rather than it sitting in their inbox or something like that and being lost, I suppose. You can actually say, oh, can I have 2 minutes and have that discussion? I take it that makes a big difference. It
makes a huge difference because they can tell you exactly where they're at and you know, the last time they bought a similar novel and how it went. Or it's a human connection between all of this that sort of cuts through a lot of bureaucracy and paperwork and waiting on email responses, and you can just be very straightforward, certainly with the people you know well. You know, getting to know the people you don't, you know, hopefully they'll appreciate this straightforward approach too.
And I think everybody agents differently. That's what's so fascinating for me about this job, is I could be doing it one way and my colleagues in offices kind of next to me might take a very different tack. But that's, again, speaks to the very kind of the specificity of the interpersonal relationships that you build, both with your clients and with the editors and foreign rights team and media agents that you're working with, because it's such a passion sort of led business, such an emotional business. It's such an investment of emotional capital in books and kind of editing them, working with them, loving them. And everybody sells things in a different way. And I love our business because everybody finds the way they want to work and who they want to work with. There's not one right way of doing things. And I think, you know, for authors looking for agents as well, it's really critical to find the right match. It is, I think Ron used the word intimate. It is an incredibly intimate relationship. It's very much like a marriage at times. You were telling me, you know, you're hearing all of these things. You're trying to deliver things to them as well. You're sometimes the first person, you are usually the first person to read the book. You're talking to them about everything strategy wise, but also kind of how they're feeling about the book, how they're feeling about the reviews, what their kind of hopes are for the book, where they're feeling vulnerable. And so it's intimate. And I just feel like every author wants to find that person that makes them feel really comfortable so they can be really direct and really honest in that relationship. Because everybody has a style. It's like your friends. You have different relationships with all your friends. You don't template the same relationship. We as agents will form a different relationship with each of our clients because we're trying to respond to what they need and what they want. But equally, the author's got to, when they're looking for an agent, be like, is that the right person for me? Does that feel like the person I want to pick up the phone to hear either good news or bad news from?
I think that's such an important point because, you know, it certainly when you are, looking for that agent for the first time with the manuscript, you're desperate. You know, you'll have certain agents that you want, but you also want to get someone. And it is a very tough thing to do at the end of the day. And I think that, you know, people don't realize that it can be important. Sometimes you will find an agent who'll pick you up, but the relationship doesn't quite gel as maybe one or both of you hoped it would, and then you have to move on again. And I think that's kind of lost on a lot of people when they're at that sort of start stage of looking for agents. They just think, I need an agent to
Yeah. I had that recently with an author that I've just sold. It's a very, very literary novel. It's like this exquisite writer at the start of what I hope is a very exciting career. And he had queried me with his first novel, which I read, and I loved his writing. And I was like, this is beautiful writing, but I don't know that I can sell this novel per se. Yeah. And then he said, would you talk to me on the phone? I was like, okay, sure. And so it was in that conversation that I realized I just loved talking to him about his craft and what he wanted to do next. And I obviously said, please send me your next novel, which he did, thankfully, which I sold very, very quickly to Riverhead, and which my colleague at C&W sold in the UK. And it's been selling around European territories. But I was not his first choice. And that's fine, because we connected on the level that was the most important one, which was he was a fantastic writer. I was a huge fan, and I knew how to talk about and sell his work in a way that gave him the result he wanted. And now he's thrilled, of course. But I'm sure that there were a lot of other agents that he was trying to get to represent him that didn't pick up the phone and didn't have a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to the fair, and you've mentioned a few times sort of Salem Forum rights and things like that. How is that just a case, again, of building relationships? One of the things that we often hear, or you read about if you're mad enough to read the publishing press and stuff, is, you know, trends of things. So like a big one in the past year has been sort of romanticy and things like that. Are these things that you're thinking about as well? Because the reason I ask that is that there's normally such a long time between when a book is picked up to when it comes out, that whatever the trend is can have passed by that stage. So do you have to kind of look three steps ahead, as it were? And does that change with foreign rights as well? Do they have different trends that you have to watch out for?
It's a really good question. They're kind of in different parts, isn't it? That question in the kind of how foreign rights, I mean, to take the sort of first piece of foreign rights, like the London Book Fair is a very foreign rights focused fair, it's like a huge number of our clients there will be, you know, Italian, German, Chinese, you know, Japanese, and all of our foreign rights colleagues will be pitching and pitching and pitching. And what's interesting in relation to trends is we do hear what trends are working, you know, for them. Like in Japan, it's more kind of uplifting, softer fiction. And so the crime fiction that we had wasn't working there. But some of the Japanese fiction is now moving and is becoming incredibly popular in the UK and America. So the interesting thing for me about trends, to be honest, I find it more interesting than the romanticy piece, because it feels, as you say, that trend started 3 years ago. And we're kind of, are we on the tail end of it? Are we in the middle of it? I don't think Brian or I are people who necessarily chase trends, because I think it's quite a... I do get it. I understand why publishers are in a position to actually chase them, because they can actually buy the book and decide to kind of publish it in 4 months if they want to kind of catch that wave. But for me as an agent, it's always writer first. And it's the conversation that Brian, you described with the writer, where you get on the phone and you just think, oh my God, I have to represent this author. I'm going to be devastated if I don't. This is so exciting. I love their work beyond all reason. And that is what will lead me to sign a client over its romanticy or its Swedish crime. I mean, there's been so many trends. We could name about 20 between us, I suspect, in the last 20 years. And they kind of go and they come back. And cozy crime was so unfashionable. Now it's super fashionable. Yeah. Now it's overpopulated. It will become a little less fashionable. I think chasing that is not a very, that's just not, a, I don't find it a very exciting way to work. I think you get diminishing returns. I think the foreign markets are actually more cautious about some of our trends, having been burnt in the past by trends that did really well for us but didn't connect with their market. And they are judicious, I think, about what they want to pick up. They don't need 10, they might need one of something of an ilk. And I suppose a true trend I don't know, something truly exciting is when you just have an author who's an utterly unique voice, you know, where you and everybody will want that book. That's it. So they are their own trend, you know, and then you see their name on the front of everything else. If you like so-and-so, you'll like this.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
A mini trend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That kind of speaks to the sort of one of the more annoying parts of writing a pitch letter is finding the comps to things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, a book is just unique and the voice is like nothing you've ever heard before. And there's no comp for this author, except, you know, it'll keep you reading until 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Having said that, I kind of think that sometimes these trends can sort of meet experience in a way that if you're a children's agent who's been representing a lot of fantasy and then all of a sudden a romanticy comes along, you're probably well placed to really do well with that author. And one of my colleagues is selling a romanticy novel. I wouldn't have a clue where to begin with romanticy. And equally with sort of the rise of TikTok in terms of social media and the content that people are getting from it. If you've been working in popular psychology and doing lots of those kinds of books to a really high level, then you're probably very well placed to pick someone out of there and make a fantastic
book.
I think it's like, it's a confluence of things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're so right, Brian. That is such a perfect... I think that thing where you're trying to jump on something because you can see it's working is a really dangerous place for an agent or indeed an editor to be in, because you don't know. You haven't read for 10 years all of those books or been kind of nerdy about them and excited, and you don't have a frame of reference. And I think if I pick up a book and I read it and I'm thinking, I mean, I think I could sell it. Like, I don't want to write. That's such a that I'm the wrong agent for that author. That would be the nastiest thing for me to be like, oh, I should just sign this in case somebody else really wants it. No, actually, you got to let everybody else find their right running mate and all of those things. Like, as an industry, we need books to sell, we need them to do well, we need the right people to be representing the authors.
I mean, get out of the way is what I say to myself. It's probably the same as well in terms of, you know, authors themselves. There'll be some authors who have just said, right, romance is the big thing, I want to jump on that and try write it. But, you know, as I say, by the time they've written their book, picked up an agent, picked up by a publisher, then probably 5 years down the line, and it's long gone, kind of a thing. So I think chasing trends, it sounds like, in any part of this business is a dangerous thing to do generally.
Yeah, I think as well, like, there's that authenticity thing. Like, everybody's looking for it in what they're reading, watching, you know, they want that. And if it feels inauthentic, it's just always something that turns somebody off. You know, when those books feel like a composite of something else, they're never quite as successful as people might expect them to be. I think also Brian, you and I are lucky because we're in these very big literary agencies. You know, we are such, you know, we're a big home for writers, you know, Curtis Brown and UTA. UTA grew out of being, you know, writers in television and film directors in that area. And like, the word has always been kind of, it's king in both of our companies. And so what's really exciting me, if I get something in and I think it's good, but I don't quite, like, I don't know what to do with it. You know, if I don't know immediately how to take that book and to sell it, I can very easily, and I just wouldn't want any author submitting to me to be kind of offended by that. I go, do you know what? I think this is really good, but I think you should actually go to Lucy Morris or Alice Lutyens, or, you know, Sheila Crowley, because she is like, her list is the heartland of that heartwarming women's fiction. If you want somebody who knows like how to sell you, it's her. Like, she will do such a good job. It's not a no, it's genuinely, I'm really glad you sent it to our agency, we're here, but I'm going to redirect you because that, you know, I want, if it's a good writer, we want to sign you, want to work with you, and we'll still be proud and champion you even if you're not actually on Cranny or on my list.
It's
a win for all of us.
And you mentioned social media there, and of course TikTok or BookTok and everything like that, which has obviously grown very rapidly. But I wondered more generally whether your role as agents, as the sort of public-facing role as agents, I suppose, has changed since the big onslaught of social media. Because for many years, you know, everyone would have to go and get the Writers and Artists yearbook and find the people they wanted in there. But now everyone is so accessible and stuff that I would guess that agents are having to become, or many of them are having to become more open to that sort of thing.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not really very good on social media, and I have to confess, it's probably a fatal flaw. But what I will say is that I've become more used to doing talks at, universities for creative writing classes, or, inviting other authors to my author event, or just being out in the world, and going to literary events that I have nothing to do with. And I suppose that's profile raising in a way. I think that's what the question could be. But I don't know that you necessarily have to have a following, but you do have to have a distinct point of view and taste and sort of establish that as your, this is what I do, and here are the books that show that story. And however which way you feel most comfortable doing that, I suppose, is how I operate. I don't know. I mean, I know there are lots of other agents who are very online, and that works perfectly beautifully for them.
It goes back to the point of there are many ways of doing this job, and I again am somebody who would quite happily live under a social media rock. I'd just rather be reading a manuscript. I'd rather be editing a manuscript than tweeting or X, whatever it's called now. And my Instagram's private because it's got, my kids and my family on it, and I don't really need the world to see it. It's for my friends, it's for my other family, kind of in different parts of the world. I don't use it as a tool for self-promotion. I could have another one, but again, it's just something else to do when I would rather be reading books and talking to my authors and on the phone. I think there's a real danger as well with social media is this idea that it's networking. And I get that it is, and it is really valuable. And I know that it's been immensely valuable to authors and connecting with other authors. I think for my younger colleagues, it's something I've spoken about quite a bit with them, that you can't put everything in that social media bucket. You can mistake the work you're putting in social media and like being active online. It's a very disposable form of networking. It sort of disappears. It doesn't stick around. And I fervently believe having a 20-minute phone call or going for a coffee with an editor will be a far better use of time and have a much more lasting impact than, I don't know, commenting on something that was in the bookseller. Because I also think, as we all know, increasingly those social media platforms have got toxic, even like the literary hubs have become more toxic. So I think for authors, sometimes there's that kind of pressure to like, I should have a platform and I should have a following and I need to kind of come delivered as a package, as if I'm a kind of a mini celebrity. And they're like some of the best writers in the world are just like, no, I don't do social media. And you think, of course you don't, because you're just trying, what you know is you need to write your next book. And social media eats up so much time. It just, you can't feed it enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was gonna say that obviously there is that negative side to social media as well, and agents, I think, are the front line potentially of some of that, of receiving some of that negativity, because obviously you're getting lots of queries in, and you can only take on so many people a year, a very handful of people probably, and some people don't take that very well, and social media gives people this idea that they can have immediate access to people, in a way that isn't always healthy, let's say.
I mean, it's a hard thing, isn't it? I get it. Like, you send out your book, it's like sending out your first child. Like, you love it, you looked after it. Like, it's something you've grown, and it can be like 3, 4, 5 years of your life. And you send it out, and if it disappears into a void, and it feels like an agent hasn't even clicked open, God, that's devastating to imagine. I think on the other side, I have so many submissions I get a day, and just trying to also service my existing client base, but also stay across them. No agent is actually sat at their desk reading. That happens in our spare time. That happens like when you're on the train on the way home, in the evenings, once you put your kids to bed, on the weekends. I've never edited a book at my desk. I just haven't had time because I've been like drawing up contracts or talking to people. So it's really hard for each side, I think, sometimes to understand each other. I will say, because I'm so little on online, that I've never actually noticed any social media abuse that's been directed at me. It might well have been, but it's just literally part. It's another benefit of being very unengaged. It sort of didn't. I wouldn't even, like, I'm sure there's like a direct messaging sort of facility that I kind of check once a year. So maybe the bad stuff's at the bottom by the time I open it up, it's gone.
Deleted, yeah.
I mean, for authors who are querying agents, like, to remember that the agent really, really wants to, like, we're never going to say no to something that we love, because we'll find a way. And so it's like, understanding that if it's just not a match, it's not my cup of tea, that's all it is. There's no sort of personal slight. And it's that we really, really want to fall in love with the books we spend time with and read at our weekends. Like Felicity said, that like that's a huge time investment on our part. And we do it because we love the discovery. And I think that's what agents are really focused on. Like we get up every morning trying to figure out what is the thing I can do for this book today, this author today? How do I sell that one? And we're just constantly buzzing in our heads of how do we help our authors and how do we find more new, exciting writers to work on and have this sort of perpetual emotion, sort of sense of working on this great novel or this great book proposal. So we really want to find those people and we're trying very hard.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the work is constantly growing and evolving for authors, you know, from very successful authors or just the ones that you're just determined to kind of break the market. It's not even just that it stays in the book world. Like, I think what probably Grania and I do a lot of is hand selling to producers that we're meeting, you know, and, you know, we have this big event this week at LBF, which again is, you know, another networking opportunity. UTN, Curtis Brown host a big party on the Tuesday of the fair, and we're inviting foreign editors, but we're also making sure that high-level producers are there so we can have those conversations. It's been a really tricky time in that area of the market. You know, we all know about the strikes. We all know that streamers have kind of been kind of going through sort of, there's a contraction that we're seeing. So to kind of continue to foment those relationships and find moments where we can just sort of talk about what we've been selling, what we've seen working at the fair, because what's really interesting to me is the books that are going really big suddenly in Germany and Italy, everybody wants. They're not always the books that television want. In fact, invariably, I find it's this other book that actually I've struggled to kind of set up internationally, but it's a very, like, it's a male thriller. And suddenly every producer's like, yes, that's what I want, because I really want a male returning series. Thank you. And I find that really interesting. And like, that's this other, once you've sold the book and you, it just like, what's really funny and it's really hard, I think, for authors to hear if you haven't found an agent yet, who haven't been sold. Oddly for me, selling the book is the easiest bit now. It used to be the bit that I was like, how will I ever sell books as a young agent? But selling it, trying to ensure it's then published really well, trying to ensure that it finds a readership, that it gets well reviewed, that there's a second book that is the right second book and we don't misfire, but also that separately that you're like, what is the right production entity to work with on this? What is the right development path for this? What is actually going to kind of honor the author's ambition for their novels, so they don't actually have the amazing kind of, you know, lightning strikes they do get a film deal and they don't sit there and look up and go, I hate that movie of my work, it's devastating.
Yeah absolutely,
it happens. It does happen.
We're almost at time, but I did want to ask, I suppose, bringing it back to the London Book Fair to finish off, I mean, what are you both looking for out of the fair this year?
I mean, I, because I used to live in London and I'm very fond of going back there, I am very sort of straightforwardly looking to, you know, we've Curtis Brown Group and UTA, we've done so many book deals in the past year. So like that anniversary mark is like a great moment to sort of look and see where their success was and how we can do more of it and sort of reconnect the dots between different personalities within our two groups so that there's not just one person receiving all the incoming, because we have a lid for every pot, as it were, you know, at this point. And we have someone who's fantastic on narrative journalism, who's got a real geek out for science. And those two agents have, you know, collaborated on about 20 books this year. So that kind of stuff only happens when you get together in person, and having those sorts of connections solidified is really satisfying and lovely to witness. And then it's to be social and to see everybody and to meet. I have some authors left in London, and to meet them is really special to me, because I'm not there on the ground. So that's what I'm looking for.
Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, the whole of my Monday, actually, Grania, you're going to see a lot of me. We're going to spend a lot of time together.
I'm looking forward to that.
We've got lunch, we've got HarperCollins party, we've got about 20 speed dates in between. That's going to be really exciting. It's going to be really great to be in our offices. And there are 30 people coming from UTA. You know, the whole of your book group is coming, you know, the practically every single media rights person and David Kramer, who runs the whole thing. So it's like, it's a serious moment, and it's so exciting for me and all my colleagues to have your US colleagues come over, and you just kind of talk really fast at each other for a day, and then you go get a cocktail. I mean, it's really great. And it's also, you know, everybody's sort of away from their desk, away from their emails, which is quite healthy, actually. You're just sitting there. And sometimes you can be talking about anything but books, but you're just you're just learning so much about that person. Like with every relationship, you can't just talk about one thing and work the whole time. So that is going to be amazing. I can just say how I'm so excited about this fair, because in the last 3 weeks, it feels like the new book emails have been flying around, and from every single person. It's not just one person like on a tear. And you're like, oh my God, look at that junior agent just smashing it. They've got like a 10-way auction for a book. That's insane. Mm-hmm. And given how early the fair is, I don't know, there's something, it feels like all the pressure is just kind of like the cork came out of the champagne bottle and it just went like bang. And from fiction, you know, to nonfiction, to romanticy. I mean, it feels like I can't think at the moment of a genre we haven't hit. And it does feel like actually like a fair where we might all be at tables actually receiving offers for things, because the fair is so early. So I think there's just going to be some heavy bonding and lots of excitement. And by the time we've crawled to Friday, we will be kind of shadows and husks, and half of us will have the flu, but we will be content. So really happy.
Excellent. It sounds like a good week. So, thank you both very much for joining us today. That's been really great, and hopefully informative to our viewers as well. Thanks very much.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yes. Thank you. It was wonderful.